Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM. And all that is now, and all that is gone, and all that's to come, and everything under the sun is in view, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
And a very good evening to you, Ben, and hi, everyone.
Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can also catch us on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Lots to get through, as usual. John, we'll be talking about how to watch a has a good chance. Assuming the skies are clear, the ISS tonight, and then if you are of a mood, we'll tell you where you can watch a little rocket launch live on the internet. And lots more to discuss too. But first, we'll start with what to see in the sky. And we start with the planet, much as there is of a night sky nowadays.
It's strange they change from week to week now. A couple of weeks ago, we had four of them out of sight. Now they're all coming back in again, which is great. Mercury, unfortunately, is out of sight in conjunction with the Sun just at the moment. So you have to wait for another week or two before that. Venus minus 3.9, a good sight, but it's quite low in the west-northwest during evening twilight. And it's just about as high now as we're going to see it during this rather low apparition, and doesn't set till about 45 minutes after complete dark, which is still a bit to go. Yep. Jupiter, on the other hand, magnitude minus 2.0. It's in Gemini and it's quite high, and it's the second brightest planet after Venus. So just go out. I suppose the best thing to do is go out and look south and just go left to right. You'll see it. It's the brightest there beside two stars called Castor and Pollux, which are Gemini, and it's a nice sight. It's been with us for a good number of months now at this stage, rather than the rest of them. But Uranus, Neptune, unfortunately Uranus is lost in the sunset. You can't see it at the moment. You could a few weeks ago. And Neptune also is hiding low in the sunrise, so not really very good there. So realistically, we only have Venus and Jupiter. And Mars, unfortunately, and Saturn, did I mention those? I should have. Low in the bright sunrise. Unfortunately, bring binoculars because they're not too easy to see. So Mars is at plus 0.9, which is dim. And the other one is Saturn, should I say, the other way around. Saturn is plus 0.9 and Mars is plus 1.2, which is even worse. Yep, so there we go. You can look for Mars about two fists to the lower left of Saturn, a little farther away every single morning. So things are changing up there as we bomb around the universe. Oh, I didn't mention this, the space station as well. We're 4 days in now until the evening passes. Started with us on the 8th of May until the 22nd. And I don't know if
you have to, tonight. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Tonight, between 11:06 p.m. and 11:13 p.m. Assuming the sky is clear enough, of course, you'll see the ISS pass. It's a quite high pass, actually. Maximum altitude 63 degrees when it's due south of us, and magnitude minus 3.8, which is similar to a little tiny bit less bright than Venus. Mm-hmm. So when you go, the evening sky is beginning to get dark, and that first object you'll see in the west is the planet Venus, and the ISS, when it comes around at 6 minutes past 11 tonight, will be almost as bright as that. And as I say, when it's due south, it will have a maximum altitude of 63 degrees, which, of course, if you're in at this latitude of 53 degrees, well, if you think about it, it'll be about two-thirds of the way between the horizon and the I was going to say the nadir, which is the zenith, I should say. So, yes, great pass tonight. And then after that, you can switch on and look at a space launch, but we'll get to that in a moment. But first of all, we have the 21% waning crescent moon. It's not currently above our horizon or on show, but it will rise at about tomorrow morning at about 10 minutes to 4 in the morning, and will be due south at its highest just at 10:15 tomorrow morning. And when it sets tomorrow at 5:01, it will be down to a 14% waning crescent phase as we head towards the new moon, which will be on Saturday the 16th at 9 p.m. And the sun will rise tomorrow in Dublin, that's Wednesday the 13th at 5:28 a.m, which is 13 minutes earlier than a week ago. Local or solar noon, that's when the sun is at its highest, and due south it's at 1:21 p.m. And the sun sets at 9:15 p.m. tomorrow, which is 13 minutes later than a week ago. And then we have twilight of various descriptions until astronomical twilight ends and nighttime begins. Actually, on, it's actually not tomorrow evening, but that'll be on the 14th at 1:05 a.m., which is actually a whole hour later than it was a week ago. And then we'll have astronomical night from that time, which is 1:05 a.m. But it'll only be astronomical night for about 31 minutes before astronomical twilight comes back in. And tomorrow night, that's the last astronomical twilight we'll have until the end of July. So if you want to view dark sky objects, dim, distant dark sky objects, you will have to last tomorrow night. Half an hour is your last opportunity for a while.
It follows the three different levels at 6, 12 and 18 degrees below the horizon. That astronomical one is the more than 12, between 12 and 18 degrees below. Yeah. So that's where that comes from. So as we whiz through the universe, as I mentioned earlier, you get the sun is either lower or higher. So the 3 degree differences are 6, 12 and 18. So just for those of you who don't know, where are you listening from? We love to know these things. 0871791032. It could be around the corner. It could be down in New Zealand or Brazil or somewhere like that. We have had people
wherever you are in the universe.
We
definitely.
We'd love to hear from you.
So tomorrow we'll have 3 minutes to 22 seconds more daylight than today, or 26 minutes more daylight than a week ago, when there will be 15 hours and 46 minutes between sunrise and sunset.
We have been following the Voyagers.
Ah, indeed. We mentioned them last week. Yeah, there is a bit of an update.
There is, and we've been watching them for a couple of months before, when we heard first that they were cutting down on the power output of these and shutting down little operations and things like that, and little instruments. So NASA is now gearing up for a big bang activity that could extend the lives of the Voyager's remaining instruments, which would be a great sign. But they have been cutting down on the power, although this only runs about 4 watts or something, that isn't it? Sending things back hours and hours. And of course, the two of them are way, way out into interstellar space at the moment. The twin Voyager 1 and 2s, both running on nuclear power, now have access to just a portion of their 470 watts. I wasn't too far out. It was 470 watts of energy that they generated immediately after their 1977 launches. And originally they were tasked with exploring the giant planets in the solar system, and the pair have long passed their expected lifespans and are still transmitting data way, way far from home. So Voyager 1 crossed into interstellar space in 2012. Seems like only yesterday, doesn't it? And Voyager 2 followed suit 6 years later. For years, NASA has been turning off the probe's instruments one at a time for their power supplies as they dwindled, and they still lose about 4 watts of power per year due to erosion of the nuclear little engine that they have. But the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, that's NASA's JPL in Southern California, has an idea which will be tested out soon, and it's going to give them a little more time. So what's running? What's not? We're going to find out.
Well, they were launched with both the same type of instruments, suite of instruments, 10 operational instruments on both. Some of them, as you mentioned, have turned off. Voyager 2 has 3 instruments running at the moment: a cosmic ray subsystem, a magnetometer, and a plasma wave subsystem. And the Voyager, there's only 2 of Voyager 1's instruments appear to be on at the moment. That's the magnetometer, which looks at magnetic fields and the gas examination it does via its plasma wave system instrument. So they're going to do, I think they're going to reroute some power. Apparently a lot of the energy that they use at the moment goes towards keeping the thrusters clear from freezing, but they have a little trick up their sleeve, which I'm not sure of what it is exactly, but they're going to reroute some power maybe to keep that, which may work more efficiently. And you mentioned they're so far away, and the signals that get to them, when we send the signal, of course, it travels at the speed of light and takes 1 day for the spacecraft to receive the signal. And if it sends a message back, of course, it'll take a day to get back. So it's one light day away.
One light day.
We used to talk in terms of light years.
Yeah, if we talk about the light from the moon, it's about 1.1 seconds old.
Something like that, less than 1.25 seconds.
So somebody shone a torch at us from the moon, it would take 1.1 seconds or thereabouts to get to us. So that just shows you the distance that these guys are at.
How far,
little fellas.
The light travelling at 186,000 miles per second, and light from the sun takes about 8 minutes. To reach us, and light from the nearest star takes 4.25 years. So when you think about it, in a way it sounds like one light day doesn't sound like an awful lot, but it's billions and billions of kilometres away.
It certainly is.
And then we casually mention that the Andromeda galaxy, the nearest one, is over 2 million light years away.
The beauty about that is us ourselves, Milky Way and Andromeda are hurtling towards each other at 350,000 miles per hour. When we do eventually hit in about 2 million years' time or thereabouts, there's not going to be too many collisions because they're just massive. You know, you get the odd collision or so.
Two clouds emerging. The particles of water are so small and so far apart.
Yeah.
The chances of two tiny droplets, or in this case stars colliding, are fairly remote. Anyway, they hope to make it to, they reckon that it will make it to 2027, which was the latest extension, but with this plan now they might get it all the way into the 2030s. And one of the people in charge said they would love it if it got to, the spacecraft reached a distance of 200 astronomical units from the planet before that would basically lose the signal. And at the moment, Voyager 1 is just a little shy of 170 astronomical units from Earth, and Voyager 2 is roughly 143 astronomical units from Earth. But you say the power is dying away. It won't give it a pack up completely, but it just gets weaker and weaker. As you may remember from your basic chemistry with nuclear fission about the half-life.
It was always, when you looked at it first, it was always classed as half-life. And what did that exactly mean?
It means that half of it decays in whatever time period it is. Mm-hmm. But it's, if you think of going from point A to point B, and in a certain period of time, you made half of the distance. So the first day, or whatever, you went halfway there, and then in the second unit of time, you were half of the remaining distance.
Right,
so therefore, you were 3/4, and then you were another 1/8, and then you were 1/16. Would you never ever get to the end? Theoretically, you never get to the end because you're always a half a step away. The steps get smaller and smaller, but you never reach the end line.
So that's why they class it as a half life of nuclear.
And of course, some of those nuclear, depending on what the material is, can have, which is one of the problems. I'm going to off piste here again, but especially some of the older nuclear power stations, whatever they were running under, the half life of the waste is thousands of years. So you have to keep this nuclear waste safe and contained for thousands of years or tens of thousands of years. But anyway. That's another story. Let's talk about something more cheerful.
Are we going to watch a launch this evening?
A launch.
Yeah, we have a SpaceX launching 6,500 pounds, which is about 3,200 and odd kilos of cargo to the ISS later on today. Coverage will start at 2300 GMT. So, I'm not sure exactly what time it takes off.
It's well, I believe 7:16 p.m. That's I think that's Eastern Standard Time. So it's 5 hours behind us because it is. It will take off from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida. And so that's five and twelve. This is just after midnight tonight. It will take off, but the coverage starts at 11 p.m. I think this evening. So you can watch that on NASA TV, or they do have a YouTube channel as well. So anyway, if you Google NASA TV, it's on space.com as well. And of course, there's commentary all the way through. And as you mentioned, nearly 3 metric tons of supplies, hardware, scientific equipment, and
it'll be there for about a month. They're saying coming back down to Earth in mid-June, with time-sensitive research and cargo as well ahead of the splacking down off the coast of California. So it's only a resupply ship. Well, when you say only a resupply ship, the technology that goes into that to launch and dock with the ISS is absolutely incredible. So there we go. So we're looking forward to that.
So that's the Dragon, but I think what you were getting to was it's the Dragon is the only an International Space Station supply ship that can haul material back down to Earth when they want to recover stuff. And the other three operational robotic freighters, which are Japan's HGV-X, Russia's Progress, and Northrop Grumman's Cygnus, they're all designed to burn up in the atmosphere as they make re-entry. So if you want to bring your samples or specimens or results back, you got to use the Dragon capsule. Because that's the only one that at the moment is designed to survive re-entry.
Yeah, there we go. Now just moving over onto the Chinese, the Chenzhou 10 freighter, which is going to deliver 7 tons. 7 tons of cargo to the Chang'e space station. Amongst this, a new spacewalking spacesuit is among all the supplies. 7 tons is a lot of stuff to get up there.
That's takes a lot of energy to lift 7 tons of material to escape velocity.
$20,000 per kilo, ballpark. So multiply that out, and that's quite a lot of money, so somebody has to pay for that. So the robotic Chang'e 10 cargo lifted off atop the Long March rocket. It was a day or two ago in that, so it takes a little bit of time to get there, but 5 hours later, very quick. Docked with the Heavenly Palace, which is Chang'e, the T-shaped 3-module space station that China finished assembling in low Earth orbit in late 2022. And the freighter delivered more than 220 items that have this total weight of about 6.9 tons, which is 6.3 metric tons. There you go. Yeah, you've got to calculate in your head the difference between the two. So there we are. So the cargo hull includes about 620 pounds of scientific experiments in fluid physics and other fields, 700 kilos of propellant, and the last of the 3 new space walking spacesuits. So I wonder if they've room to hang those up there in the space wardrobes. So, there were 2 of these suits have been delivered already on the Chang'e 9 cargo flight, which lifted off in last July. So have they used it yet? I don't know. So that's interesting to watch.
The names, forgive my Chinese pronunciation, but the Tiangong, which is the space station, as we mentioned before, translates to Heavenly Palace. And the core module on that is what translates to Harmony of the Heavens, and 2 of the other modules translate to Quest for the Heavens and Dreaming of the Heavens.
That is that's an issue. One is called Mengchen. We have to mention this, and it's Dreaming of the Heavens. So it's brilliant the way that they call different things. Really interesting names. So it usually holds about 3 astronauts at a time. So there are 3 at the moment, but every now and again they have possibly just 6 when they just swap over and come back and do whatever they need to do. So, yep, that's what they're doing. So that's interesting on both sides, the ISS and the Chinese space station.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast.
I caught this, you probably did as well. The sun unleashed a colossal solar flare.
Yes, I saw that.
And a coronal mass ejection raising the chances of northern lights. You just mentioned that earlier on. There's a possibility. Although it's getting darker later, which is a shame if you're into that. But no doubt I'll be up doing my stuff for the early hours of the morning. So it's a powerful M5.7 solar flare. It erupted from the sun on May the 10th, that's 2 days ago, unleashing an impressive coronal mass ejection. It usually takes about 2 days to get here. And with a bit of luck now, we might see if some of the northern lights right down here into the lower latitudes that we are at, 56, 57 degrees thereabouts.
Well, Dublin, 53 degrees north of the equator. Yes.
Yep.
And no matter where you are in Ireland, it's just a degree or two.
Yep. So
less or more than that.
Yep, so it peaked at 1339 GMT from the sunspot region AR4436. I have a name and a number for it. Now rotating into the Earth's strike zone on the sun's northeastern lib. So, bit of luck now. Later on now, we get a bit of an old light show.
You never know. I'm going to look back now at some photographs I got over today. One of the IAS members, that's the Irish Astronomical Society, Michael Murphy. He's taking photographs of the sun every day. So I'm going to go back now and have a look at the ones he took about 2 days ago, see if I can see that particular one. But anyway, we hope, I want a bit of luck. We'll get to see some aurora tonight or tomorrow, but as you mentioned, the sun's setting very late and the astronomical twilight, there's no or very little astronomical night now after tonight and tomorrow. So here's a subject close to your heart, John.
Pluto.
No, I wasn't going to talk about Pluto at all, unless you have some update on Pluto.
No, unfortunately not.
No, space junk.
Oh yes, I like space. No, we don't like space junk, but we like space junk.
And we have spoken about it here many times about the amount of disused, discarded, old satellites and other bits and blobs of some, even satellites that have crashed into each other and broken apart into many thousands of pieces. And there are tens of thousands of pieces that are actually being tracked by radar. But we, generally, up to now, we've only spoken about them in terms of the space junk in low Earth orbit. But now, and in the coming years, it could well be that space junk around the moon could also become a problem. And it is estimated that come August 5th of this year, which is not too far away, is it? Is it 12 weeks or so? I'm not sure. That a discarded SpaceX Falcon 9 upper stage is expected to strike the moon. It was part of SpaceX's January 2025 launch, the one that sent Firefly's Aerospace Blue Ghost and iSpace's Hakuto R2 landers to the moon. Now, the Blue Ghost successfully landed in March of 2025 and carried out 2 weeks of surface operations, including the first capture of the first solar eclipse from the lunar surface. The other probe, the Hakuto R2's resilience lander, fell silent before what they call litho breaking. It landed hard on the moon back in June 2025. But not only did they have calculated the day, but they've also reckoned that they know exactly what time of the day it'll be, and that is 6:44. That's a.m. Universal Time, at a time when the moon is in the waning gibbous phase, 58% illuminated from our point of view. The moon will be above the horizon in the early morning. The sky is from America, but then we should see it here. Let me see if I got that right. But Unfortunately, certain parts of the visibility prospects aren't good. The impact is expected to occur on the illuminated side of the moon near Einstein Crater. Now that's up on the way up on the top left limb. And that's only occasionally visible from Earth, but depending on the moon's wobble or that libration where it wobbles back and forth and up and down, so we may not see it. But there has been some impacts. That's the thing about the moon, because it has no atmosphere, of course, anything coming in, at least we're safe from little small rocks and things like that. They'll burn up. But any type of microparticle even on the moon, because there's no atmosphere, if it hits the moon, it'll... a little bit of bang. You need to be careful. The astronauts will need to be careful when they're out for a walk, because even a tiny meteoroid could puncture their spacesuit. But apparently the first human-made object to strike the moon was the Soviet Union's Luna 2 back in 1959. And, of course, we have lots of the Apollo era landers. They're still there. And in 2009, NASA's Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, or LCROSS, deliberately struck the moon near the Cabeus Crater because they wanted to, it was basically part of their search for water in the resulting to debris plume. So when they set up a plume, they were analysing that spectroscopically, I presume, to see if there's any water in it. But there has been others, and I know your favourite is the Tesla car, which is an orbit around the sun. But certain people want to make it mandatory now that if you're going to the moon, you're discarding bits and rockets on your way to the moon, that you will send them deliberately into
an area,
not an area on the moon, but basically into an orbit around the sun, so that they won't, to such a degree anyway, that they won't get caught by the Earth's or the moon's gravitational pull and cause a danger. In future years. I know there are some parts of spacecraft that are in solar orbits, I should say, and they will be for thousands, maybe millions of years, don't know, like the Tesla car. You can go back in a million years and
might need a bit of a polish at that stage.
Might run out of fuel by then.
Definitely. Power. Yeah, it's remarkable. There's a Tesla car up going around Mars and back again.
And there's a mannequin in the seat. I'm sure you've seen the photograph.
I have. It's brilliant with his arm out the window and everything.
Yeah. Look at Mr. Goo.
Yep, so there we go. Now, something to look forward on, would you believe, Friday the 13th in 2029. Where are we now? 2026. It's not that far away. It's known as the God of Chaos. Asteroid Apophis will blaze across the sky, as I say, on April the 13th, which is a Friday. And it's going to be a rare stargazing spectacle, which will unfold. It's going to come between, you know, the geostationary satellites that we have about 22,500 miles out. It's going to come within 20,000 miles of the planet here. So with a bit of luck, it's not going to be, with everybody's calculations, not going to be of any danger to us. But it's a naked eye asteroid, and it's known as 99942. Apophis makes this extraordinarily close flyby of Earth, and it's a once in a lifetime event, so that'll be worth putting that date in the diary. So put it on your phone now with this.
Even once in more than one lifetime, because something that size coming this close happens, they reckon, about once every 5,000 to 10,000 years, which is quite a few lifetimes.
Yep, so there we go. So put that date in the diary again, Friday the 13th, 2029. Magnitude 3.1. It's not that bright, really. But
no, but that you could see, you'd see that with the naked eye, assuming it's clear as it whizzes by. That should be interesting now. I hope we do get a clear sky, and we'll be able to see it from Ireland on that day.
No, you've got to go into Europe and Africa, or even Western Asia.
Oh.
And it's appearing for one night only.
Yes, it's going to
whiz by.
But on the second night, and you'll certainly need your binoculars or small telescope. Now, ESA, which is European Space Agency, and JAXA, which is the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, they've signed a memo of cooperation. And basically, they are going to send a joint probe to meet Apophis and track it and follow it as it goes past. And they're going to see, what they want to do is see the effect of the of the Earth's gravitational pull on the, how it affects the orbit, such like, and hopefully find out more about the asteroid itself. Unfortunately, I have to cut that one short because we have
run out of time.
Thank you, John, for your news items and, of course, for driving the sound desk. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. It's music all the way now. Up next is Dublin's greatest hits, and then from 10 p.m. to midnight, Nigel Wood has his ear to the globe with his world music mix, and then from midnight till 2 a.m, Dave Barry's after hour show with his mix of jazz, blues and soul. Nigel Wood has his world music mix, and please join myself and John the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.